My name is Patricia Kathleen, and this podcast series will contain interviews I conduct with female and female-identified entrepreneurs, founders, co-founders, business owners, and industry gurus. These podcasts speak with women and women-identified individuals across all industries in order to shed light for those just getting into the entrepreneurial game, as well as those deeply embedded within it. Histories, current companies, and lessons learned are explored in the conversations I have with these insightful and talented powerhouses. The series is designed to investigate a female and female-identified perspective in what has largely been a male-dominated industry in the USA to date. I look forward to contributing to the national dialogue about the long overdue change of women in American business arenas, and in particular, entrepreneurial roles. You can contact me via my media company website, wild.agency, that's wilde.agency, or my personal website, patriciakathleen.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's start the conversation. Hi guys, welcome back. This is Patricia Kathleen, and I am over the moon today to be sitting down with Hema Crockett. She's the co-founder of High Performanceology. I'm gonna say welcome to Hema right now.
Thank you so much, I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. I'm gonna give you guys a quick bio of Hema and her background, and then I'll walk you through what the roadmap of the podcast will look like. So Hema is a military spouse whose husband had retired from the Marine Corps after nearly 23 years. Being married to the military, it can often be hard to have your own career, but during this time, she was fortunate enough to grow her career from an entry-level analyst into an HR executive. Hema has over 18 years of experience in helping both public and private organizations transform into places where people want to work. She believes that organizations should set the foundation where employees grow and develop as people, fueling alignment, innovation, and business results. She has created award-winning cultures and teams by ensuring HR programs and the people strategy are aligned to the business goals and grounded in the company's core values. She was fortunate to travel the world for a little over 3 years and lived in places like Kathmandu, Nepal, and Berlin. Berlin, Germany, when she and her husband were working for the State Department. Taking these experiences in conjunction with having traveled the world and seeing firsthand how other countries run organizations, she came to one conclusion. We spend so much time at work, we better damn well love where we work.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank
you. That's fantastic. I love that bio. That's wonderful. So listen, you guys, we're going to go through a basic academic background and kind of first jobs after that with Hema. Then we're going to turn to her current businesses and titles therein and questions that we might have with that. Then we're going to turn to other companies or projects that she's working on, and then goals that she has over the next 3 years within all of her companies and endeavors. Then we're going to wrap it all up with advice that Hema has for all of those of us listening and speaking with her. So let's jump right into it. What is your academic background, and what was your first kind of professional career following that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Scottsdale and first generation to grow up in America, actually. And going to college, I went to the University of Arizona, and it was just kind of a given mm-hmm. that you go straight to college right after high school. And I studied psychology, and when I went into college, I wanted to be a forensic psychologist for the FBI.
Yeah.
Of which I think there's 5 in the world.
I think I wanted to be that at one point, too. It's weird. It's it was a very powerfully moving idea for me.
Yeah, right. me too.
And there's 5 in the world. So you were going to be the 6th.
I was going to be the 6th. and I realized that it required a lot of schooling, and mm-hmm. it was extremely competitive, and I was just exploring when I was in college what else was out there. And really got wrapped up in business, you know, helping run a couple of the different committees and the large activities that happened on campus. Mm-hmm. And decided that I wanted to stick with psychology because it was just about how people behave and what really drives their actions, and then tying that in with the business world. So what I did is I ended up sticking with psychology and moving into a focus on business, but international business specifically.
Nice. That's a really cool like forte. I think a lot of people skip that when they think of psychology.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of different, we tend to think more of the therapy realms,
yeah, exactly,
or things of that nature, but no one ever gets into businesses, the psychology of social custom, you know, all of that.
And I'll say in HR, it's helped a lot when you talk about the psychology of people.
Yeah, right.
Right, really understanding from that perspective.
So did you get a degree in psychology?
Or I did. I have a degree in psychology and business, and then an MBA in global management as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds heady.
It was, but I will tell you, I think that holistically it was more about just being able to understand business, and the best way to do that is to dive right in sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then I was fortunate enough to take that and work in organizations with international experience.
Yeah, I love the international influence because it feels elite. But maybe it's just another category.
Just another category. I will say graduating college, it wasn't that elite. We had, you know, just gone to war and everybody was losing their jobs and people were going back to college. So who'd want to hire a, you know, fresh grad, 20-something out of college? And so for me, my first job actually had nothing to do with any of those things.
I was going to say, was your plan to work like on a global scale when you got that degree, or was it to work for an American company and just have their global interaction?
It was to work for an American company and have the global interaction.
Okay.
I think on some level, I've always wanted to live in Europe. I mean, I was born in London, and just to go back would be great. And I, years later, had an opportunity to work internationally, but at the time, it was really more so focused on American companies with an international presence.
Right.
But leaving college, you just kind of have to say yes at a time when the economy is tanking and you take what you can get. And so I ended up going into sales, and I was fortunate that when I left college, I had gone to one of these career fairs, and a company hired me and moved me to LA. Wow. And so it was, okay, let's do this. And you just make the most of it. And it was a pretty large company. They did have an international presence as well. But I was in sales, and it's not really where I wanted to be long term. Mm-hmm. But at that point, the one thing I learned early on is you say yes.
Yes, I believe
you
that.
You have to say yes.
Even now, even later on for me, say
even
yes.
Even now.
Come from a place of yes.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I agree. So you moved out to LA. Were you at that point a military family, or had you not become one yet?
I hadn't even met my husband at the time.
Right.
And so I moved out to LA, and the economy continued to do its thing. And I was laid off from that original company within about, 6 or 7 months, which is great experience to have when you're so young in your career as well.
Right.
But there was somebody else who was a very high up VP in that organization who was moving to San Diego to start up a division in another company, and said, from what I've seen so far, you have the dedication, you're going to go places. Do you want to help me do this? It may or may not work. I said yes again.
Nice.
And I moved out to San Diego. That company moved me out to San Diego, actually. And it was shortly after that that I met my husband and became a military wife shortly thereafter, right? And military was new to me, so I didn't really understand what it fully entailed, how you move around, what that means for your career. You know, I come from a household where both parents work, but my mom stayed home for many years when I was younger, but she still had her own career.
Right.
And I didn't really understand what you have to give up, but what you gain at the same time.
Right. The social community.
The social community. Yeah. And just a different way of living in the world, I think. You don't take things for granted. I think that many people do. You know, I'm very lucky in that my husband always came home from every deployment, and I think that helps put life in perspective. But also his career was very unusual. It was always in Southern California, which doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
And so that allowed me to keep growing my career and having that base here. And when we did leave, we left for about 3.5 years to work with the State Department, and came right back to San Diego, and I picked up my professional network. I picked up those connections that I had made long before we had left in the first place.
Right. So you find that it changed how you were coming at business once you became kind of this military, you know, family lifestyle? You mentioned that it definitely affected your business, but not just logistically. Do you think that there was like structure or implementation that you brought into your business career from that initial like first blush baptism into like the military family?
Yeah, you know, the answer should probably be a resounding yes.
But I know, it doesn't always have to be. I get it, yeah.
But I think it was because I was pretty hard-headed going into that marriage in the first place.
Right.
And I wanted to be independent. I wanted to have my own career. And I had established that early on, even before meeting my husband. Mm-hmm. And so I think what changed was the ability to take risks. And when he was deployed, yeah, I used those times to really take risks in my career.
Nice.
And to move forward with what would my reason be for saying no, right? And I think that's where my love for startups really came in.
It's a really good question, because I think a lot of times you're going to come out with fear, right?
Exactly.
What's my reason for saying no? Fear, money, time.
Time. And the truth is, at the end of the day, I had nothing to lose by making that leap.
Mm-hmm.
And the personal aspect of it was it allowed me to focus on work and not focus on him being halfway across the world.
Yeah.
And whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
And so it allowed me to really jump all in.
Yeah.
And that's how I built, you know, here in San Diego is really where the majority of my career has been in the tech biotech space.
Okay.
Before is that starting how you first got in?
Yeah. Is that first how you got into startups, the tech biotech?
It is. It is. Wow. So I have been in the biotech community since about 2005, 2006.
How did you get into it?
You said yes. That's really it. I said
was
yes.
Was it the first person and who brought so you down here was biotech?
It wasn't actually. So that company went through its own legal issues, and mm-hmm. it took me another two or three companies to really figure out where I wanted to call home for a little while.
Yeah.
And what I was doing at the time was really helping biotechs establish their presence from a talent perspective within San Diego.
Nice.
And it just, there was kind of an excitement there, right? You didn't know what was going to happen. There were these brand new companies. They were figuring things out along the way.
Yeah.
And when I was growing up, my dad would work a full-time job and had his own company that he would work with, you know, he would do work with. And he had a couple of employees. They would come over at night. Mm-hmm. And it just was this drive of he could just be sitting on the couch, but here he is doing something else. And my mom just constantly driving to do more and be better and really keep educated.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I think it was business and the startup kind of scene, I think was just in my blood, having to just, I think, figure it out and dive in. What works? What doesn't? How can you make it work?
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is we left San Diego in about 2010,
mm-hmm.
and it was perfect timing. I think I was at that point in my career where I was as high as I could go within the organization I was in.
Right.
I had gone through some pretty crazy kind of personal medical issues,
mm-hmm.
and we needed a reboot. We needed a change. And I believe that people do have choices. And part of that choice is to say yes when crazy opportunities arise.
Yeah.
And one day my husband said, so there's this crazy assignment in Kathmandu, Nepal. We would leave in 3 months. Do you want to do it? And this is what we would be doing.
Right.
And I thought, oh, what the hell? I have nothing to lose. I mean,
how long was the deployment for?
We were gone for about 3.5 years overall.
Okay.
So he had deployed early on when we first met,
mm-hmm.
and then he, you know, little things here and there along the way, and this wouldn't have been the type of assignment that he would go alone.
Mm-hmm.
So they were attaching him basically to the State Department for about 3.5 years, and I thought, you know what, I've never not worked,
mm-hmm.
I've never not had a career, let's try this, we'll never get this opportunity again. Who's going to move us to Kathmandu, Nepal?
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of times when we said this to people, they were like, oh, I've been there. It's in Italy. And we were like, that's Naples, actually.
No. We're talking a higher altitude than that.
Yeah, higher altitude, middle of, you know, India and China.
Yeah.
And so we packed up and left. And really for the next, you know, 3 months, we lived out of two suitcases until we had some things that came from home.
And you were in Nepal this entire time?
We were in Nepal for about 18 months.
Wow,
and it was
that's a long time.
The first time that in my adult working life that I didn't have a type of career where I was running a team. driving towards something larger, building an organization. It was the very first time where I took a step back and I was okay with it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until years later I realized that it was happy. I was happy, and it was this weird balance that didn't exist in my life prior to going. And I was working before we left, you know, 70, 80 hours a week, because in my head, that's really what high performance was.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that you had to take a step back and step out of it to recharge in order to continue sustaining performance at a certain level.
So did you start like pulling at those threads and developing these pillars of your current theory when you
Not at that time.
Okay.
Not at that time, actually. I think I needed Nepal to get out of my own way and get out of my own head. Mm-hmm. And to see a part of life. I mean, I grew up traveling. My family was really big on picking a different destination in the world, and that's where we spent 4 to 6 weeks each year.
Yeah.
So we were big on doing that in the first place. But to really immerse yourself in a culture that doesn't really have a lot of solid infrastructure, there's really no big business in Nepal.
No.
I mean, the business is the government. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up working with the State Department and the Department of Justice and immersing myself into this local culture.
Wow.
And I spent 2 weeks trekking to Everest Base Camp while I was there.
Amazing.
When you're there, you have to. There's just
right? I mean, required.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to go back. It's not like anything like that, right? Yeah. And so I had gone with a friend of mine, and it was just the two of us. My husband actually had to come back to the States, so unfortunately he missed it. But when you're out there in the middle of nowhere for 2 weeks, there's people and there's noises, but there's your own, you know, the thoughts in your head. And so at that point, I realized it was the first time I had ever taken a vacation in that regard where I wasn't thinking about work and I wasn't thinking about what's next. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we moved to Berlin. And so we were with the State Department in Berlin for a little while.
It's a big transition.
It's a huge transition. I mean, San Diego to Nepal was a hard transition in the first place.
Yeah.
And then Nepal to Berlin was a difficult transition as well.
Yeah.
Berlin back to San Diego was a little less because, you know, we were acclimating back.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until 2013, mid-2013, when we came back home, that it really felt like something needed to change. I didn't want to go back into that same working 70, 80 hours a week. I mean, I worked the day before I got married, the day after I got married.
Yeah, sure.
The only reason I didn't work on my honeymoon is because we went to a place where there was literally no cell service.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, yep, I know.
To find internet, it was kind of a trek. So we purposely picked a place like that.
That's clever.
But it was through kind of all of that and taking a step back. And I was fortunate that I didn't have to get a job immediately. So my husband said, stay home for a little while, figure out what it is that you want to do. I can't stay home is what I quickly realized. I have to do something.
Right.
And I jumped right back into the biotech space. And really, again, helping drive culture, talent, and what people are looking for. And went through a couple of big biotechs here in San Diego post-merger, post-acquisition, and realized my career was really built around times of change. When people are going through changes, organizations are going through changes.
It's a volatile time.
It's volatile, and that's where I was thriving.
Nice.
And I loved it because it's risky.
Sounds like crisis management or something.
It's kind of, right? I think of it like... not the closer, like a cleaner almost that comes in
afterwards.
That's
what I think of, yes.
And it's, you know, it's not the profiler of the FBI from when I graduated high school, but it is just a lot of fun. And I started at it's like a fintech startup. And that was the first time where I realized I could really get into building organizations. Nice. It wasn't until then that I started thinking about, could I do this myself? And we built, so when I say we, I have a business partner in High Performanceology, Jamie, and we met working at this startup.
Okay.
And we built it for about 3 years, and just through different regulations, it was an unregulated industry to start with and then became regulated, and the business
goes
through a lot of change.
Yep.
It's also people who don't want to go through change, and it's hard when you're used to doing things a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's where we had met, and we built this organization together, really built the HR infrastructure together. We both left there at the end of 17 and went our separate ways. And we stayed in touch. kind of helped each other along the way. My husband was retiring from the Marine Corps, and this was, he had decided he was going to retire at the end of 17. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of change involved with that. If that's been his whole career, he doesn't know anything different.
Yeah.
And I wanted to fully immerse myself in my own company. So I had established one company called Suma Strategies in 2017, and I was doing it on the side. And when you're building an organization for somebody else and doing something on the side, it sucks out any mental capacity that you have left.
Yes.
But I realized I wanted to just jump all in and make that leap.
Okay.
But I was nervous because for him, he's retiring. He's moving into this land of the business world, very different from military. And I decided to go back in-house for a very short amount of time until he got his sea legs. He figured out what he wanted to do. He landed in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. And I realized I need to do it. So I fully made the leap, started Suma Strategies, took it, you know, off the ground. And Jamie and I stayed in touch and realized that each of our companies, which she had started her own, we're driving towards the same thing. We wanted to create organizations where employees thrive and grow.
Yeah.
And organizations that are achieving business results. And so in October, we unofficially came together and started High Performanceology. And then in January, this past January, it became official. Mm-hmm. And it's been our own learning journey.
Yeah.
Along the way. And I love what you're doing with female founders because there's not a lot of us that are willing to speak about the journeys and be open about what got us here.
Yeah, candidly, like really laying it on the line. I know.
Keeping it real.
But it's part of why, you know, the male and male identified industries have done so well. They do have this kind of, there's a lot of terms for it, you know, locker room, like deals, handshakes, golf course deals. They have like this natural mentorship, apprenticeship of like, yeah, I'll refer you. Word of mouth is frequently attached to how men do business. And as women, some of those aspects we just haven't done enough of, you know, this kind of networking aspect.
Yes.
Every woman I talk to who, from the most powerful down to the, you know, very novice entrepreneur, has this kind of reluctance to network. It's like this trepidation until they've gotten really good at it. And then they talk about it like it's like the best thing they've ever done. But it's that, and it's weird because we network, I believe, you know, and our history as a gender quite well. Mm-hmm. We've always gotten
totally
together
agree.
And come together. But when you attach business to that, I find all of my female and female identified colleagues resist, they pull back. You know, there's a bit of a reluctance there. And it's this concept, I think, tied in, at the risk of becoming sexist or sounding that way now, like I will say, women are in the United States of America are taught not to talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, at least the generation I came up in, I'm 42 years old, and it was very déclassé or inappropriate for, you know, one to boast about themselves, and that included listing off one's skills. Well, how are you going to talk about yourself as a founder if you're not going to list off, you know, and in a confident way? It just, the two don't match up. And so I think that getting this kind of a rhetoric going, especially with, you know, women like yourself, is paramount to including it into, you know, the next generation. And I refuse to be part of the problem. I don't know if I'll be the solution, but I will not be part of the baked-in problem.
You won't participate in the problem.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's interesting. You know, it's a balance that it's hard to strike sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because you think you're talking too much about yourself, and then it's how do you talk about your business? And I think it's important to keep a personal connection to your business.
Right.
And I think
okay.
when you talk about your company or any industry, I think it's important to keep what made you decide to become a female founder. Or if you're still in-house, why are you in the position that you are today? How did you get to that leadership position as a female? Mm-hmm. Right? I think it's in all of those personal stories and the storytelling aspect that I think that's how you keep teaching the next generation and quite frankly, our own generation and us to take chances, take the risk, and anything is possible. Mm-hmm. But you have to talk about it. And I think a big piece of that is keeping it real. It's not everything that's rainbows and sunshine. Mm-hmm. It's the hard stuff, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to do this. It's a give and take, especially at the beginning. There's no 9-to-5 job. There's no Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. You are always on.
Yeah, I was just talking with an entrepreneur in Salt Lake City, and we were talking about how the most interesting things are rising from the fall. It's the fall. You know, the billionaire Ooh. Story is, while it's cotton candy and fun and yummy to eat, it's not what unites us. It's Mm-mm. the struggles, it's the difficulty, struggles. It's the rising from those falls. And I think that that's what we all benefit from listening to,
yeah.
you know, and getting into that. You have, mentioning this dialogue, even in talking about sharing this podcast information, you have some tenets that come out about having like a really honest rhetoric with yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you reach those into, you know, developing your HR strategies and things like that? Do you focus companies in on talking and really noticing? I mean, I read some of the background of performanceology and how it's kind of rooted in, I'm old school, so I call it work-life balance, but I think that you're kind of, it explains that it gets into like really knowing who your employees are and using them to the best of their ability. And it sounds so like, well, of course,
like,
but it
basic,
never
right?
happens. So can you speak to that? Because it kind of sounds like you use it even in your everyday life as
well. Yeah, definitely. You know, what we really talk about is kind of three tenets of it. Mm-hmm. There's you, your team, and your organization. And I think a lot of things out there, you'll notice that they're really built on either your team or your organization. And then separate from those two, you see the you, right? And we tend to see that in like self-help books or those arenas. But the truth is that it's really all connected. There has to be a piece here that is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. How am I showing up? Whether it's at home, whether it's to my friends, whether it's at work with colleagues,
right.
If I'm an executive in the boardroom, how do I come across, right? And I think a big part of that is really going inward and taking a harsh look at who we are and how we're representing ourselves and really saying, am I comfortable with how I show up?
Mm-hmm.
To base that and to anchor that in our own personal core values, I think really helps determine the types of organizations and businesses that we want to create. So I did this in-house, but now it's also about not only do I do this for clients, but it's also how do we want to run high performanceology as a business,
mm-hmm.
as a business with employees,
right?
Right. So we're looking on both sides of it. I think people have to take a real hard look at themselves in order to be not only the best leader, but the best person for their team, whether they lead people or are just a leader. I don't think you need to lead people.
Right.
To be a leader.
I feel like there's a lot of lying that happens just in that platform you have, even as someone who's led teams.
Yeah.
I'd say things like, you know, communication's my ultimate, you know, goal. And then it came down to, I was the one going like, listen, I don't want to be in a meeting that can be an email. You know, I mean, I was saying those kinds
right.
of things because it was, and that's not someone who's very communication oriented. That's someone who's saving a lot of time. I mean, so I think that there is, from myself coming from my own statue all the way up to people that I've worked mm-hmm. with and for over the past 25 years, it feels like you sit down and write the ideal outline of yourself, and that's what you pitch, but that's not really what you live like
reality.
In business. Do you find that that's happening a lot? Like there's a divorce of idealism versus what really is happening?
And I think it goes back to something you mentioned about what people think you should appear as,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially as it relates, you know, specifically to female founders, but
right.
holistically, I think we try to be what other people want us to be,
mm-hmm.
and we need to start thinking about who is it that I want to be? What type of leader do I want to be, right? And I think a big part of being a leader is being able to say, I don't know, but I'm going to make sure my team, I have the team who does know,
mm-hmm.
right? And surrounding yourself with people who are smarter than you,
right.
especially in certain areas, who drive you, who may have the same core values as you, but approach things differently. They look at things differently. And that diversity of thought really comes into play.
Yeah.
But I think it is about dropping this facade. I think it's mm-hmm. about really getting real with how are we showing up and do our actions and our behaviors match mm-hmm. what we're actually saying?
Right. This is another female thing that I noticed a lot. I've talked to some pretty dynamic women over the past month, and the higher up, you know, the success or age ladder, however you want to measure that, the more they'll say that women don't outsource as quickly
yes.
as men. And it comes from, a lot of them have speculated, and I know there's, you know, social economists that argue this as well, that it comes from the fact that they are, you know, in the house. They cook, they clean, they manage the children, they do the dry cleaning, the car wash, and they're built into doing these, you know, master roles of so many things. Whereas, you know, men are given this brevity of like, you focus on you mm-hmm. and your career. And so they hit anything outside yeah. of that and they're totally okay saying, I don't know how to cook, I'm going to get a chef. You know, that kind of a thing instead of this like...
we have something to prove.
Yeah, we do. And we're multitaskers. And, you know, someone was just saying the other day, she doesn't know anything about social media and she's running her own social media campaign and her company largely survives on social media and she won't give it away because she's, you know, it's this weird ego pride
thing. Attached to it, yeah.
Yeah, and she'll openly say, I hate it, it ruins my time and whatever. And this is really powerful woman and someone was just saying, we won't outsource. Like, nobody will ever do this. And it kind of runs into what you're saying, like that disconnect feels more powerful, you know, with female founders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the, what's sad is that a lot of the, there is such pleasure to be gained in outsourcing a task that you don't do well to someone who does it brilliantly.
Oh my gosh.
The amount of just happiness and joy I feel from giving something that is not my zone of genius to somebody who it is amazing. And that is not, for some reason, it's just not rote.
Yes.
We don't think of it that way. So do you go in and advise companies to this? Do you say, listen, you got to outsource that? Or do you just reconfigure teams?
We do a little of both, actually.
Okay.
So one of the things that we do is we have a proprietary assessment. And it's really designed to go in and assess an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at a lot of different factors. We're looking at leadership excellence. We're looking at HR strategy, HR excellence, team dynamics. So there's a lot of things that are going into this. And then what we do is we really prioritize what our findings have shown us.
Mm-hmm.
We put together a really tailored and personalized roadmap to the organization, of which a lot of times it's, this is not your native genius.
Right.
Right. So when does it make sense to hire somebody external and when does it make sense for you to keep it? Mm-hmm. And so we will help organizations determine that, but it's also part of a broader picture. Right? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? What is the outcome that you're driving for first?
Right.
And then let's create a holistic roadmap to help you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of doing a little bit of both. To go back to something you said, I feel like you were in my office earlier today when my business partner and I were having this exact conversation
mm-hmm.
about what is it that we outsource ourselves as an organization to other people.
Right.
Right? Because who are we to go out and tell organizations where they should spend their time, where they should spend their money if we're not walking the talk? And we really believe that we need to walk that talk.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not telling our clients anything that we are not willing to do ourselves.
Nice.
Right? Not only as we build the company, but just as people and as individuals.
Right.
So we go out there and we build these roadmaps and we have a couple of ways that we look at it and we really leave it up to clients and we walk them through their options, which are, we can either help you implement if you don't have maybe the internal infrastructure to do it
mm-hmm.
or you want to leave it to an external expert to really come in.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have the infrastructure, we'll give you the roadmap that we've created together.
Right.
And your internal folks can go ahead and implement. But it's really about making sure that we are sticking true to our mission, which is creating these organizations where people truly thrive and they grow, they want to be, which all drives business results.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying it has to just be us and high performanceology.
Right.
We're saying whatever gets you there, just get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what we're doing now is we are writing a book that goes right along nice. With everything we are talking about,
right.
but making it more of a how-to guide so that we can get to a lot more organizations, especially in the small to mid-size market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about starting with yourself. And we're starting with the truth, the self-awareness piece, and then moving into how work is changing. Because how work is changing,
mm-hmm.
organizations aren't keeping up enough.
No.
Right, with what's happening.
Yeah.
And it goes to things like benefits as well. What employees want today is very different than what employees wanted even 5 years ago, let alone yeah. 10 or 15.
Right.
But it's balancing, you know, the different generations that exist.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it's about how do we give a how-to guide so organizations can start to think differently
mm-hmm.
and then hire people like us or their own internal team to help them achieve those results.
Right.
And we think that it starts at the top, right?
Yeah.
HR teams and executive teams need to do their own work before they can build cultures where people want to be.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And the work-life balance, I mean, everything from the geography of the office environment
it's
down to like,
so true.
You know, the virtual environment that we're all like wrapped up into now. I think it is like an ever-changing landscape. And in that, HR for me, even to 20 years ago, legally, it changes, it feels like daily, you know, and by state as well.
Right,
I mean,
right.
If you're taking
California's
businesses.
California's the hardest.
Yeah, right. And then you have all of those other dynamics changing. Do you do kind of like a profile assessment for each company and each, like, when you guys drop in, there's got to be so many data points that mm-hmm. you're kind of putting into that whole diagnostics mm-hmm. and metrics and things like that. Do you have, like, you mentioned the three main points of, you know, and you have, like, the culture, and you have three different areas that you look at when you're doing, like, kind of an intake. But do you have, does it depend on the industry, I suppose I'm asking? Because, well, you guys are dealing with, you were dealing in your previous company with health sciences and things, or the biomed sciences. Mm-hmm. But do you guys take on different genres of different companies? And with that, do the metrics change? I guess that's what I'm asking.
We actually are industry agnostic.
Okay.
Because between us, while a lot of my career has been built in the biotech and the tech space, her background is hospitality and aerospace. Okay. So I have government as well. Mm-hmm. But I've gone financial services, fintech. So we have a lot of different industries. Mm-hmm. And to answer your question, things don't change as much as you'd think.
Oh, wow.
You know, what we look at, so we have a lot of interview-based questions. Mm-hmm. But then we look at things like Glassdoor. Because perception is reality.
Yes.
And if it's out there, people are reading it. Yep. And that is the story that they tell themselves is based on what they're reading. So they don't even need to talk to you as an organization to really start understanding what's truth and what's fiction. Mm-hmm. They're making their minds up based on what already exists. Mm-hmm. So we'll read Glassdoor. We'll talk to leadership. We'll talk to employees. We'll talk to the layers in between. We'll look at any of their internal different, you know, if they have an employee handbook or different policies.
Right.
Just to see what type of organization are they. Certain things may change. Large government contractors, they also have to play by different rules. Mm-hmm. And so we do take into consideration some of those things. But by and large, the same issues exist regardless of industry. And mm-hmm. it's been so interesting to kind of see that.
It makes sense, though. It feels like the human anatomy.
That's it.
There's like a similar component to
exactly.
every single company.
Exactly. And if I think back on my career, in every industry I've been in, including the government, the truth is the problems have been the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How you tackle those issues and, you know, what works for that specific organization may look different, but the core issues stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you had made this point earlier where it sounds so basic, right? To create these organizations
right.
where people want to be, but it's hard because going back to psychology, mm-hmm. people are different. And their behaviors and actions are now driven by the organization.
Right.
Right? And so it's just an interesting dichotomy that it's all coming together years later when I didn't plan on.
Yeah, you
on
had
going
the primordial
that.
Soup of
yeah,
like how to get your place there. So what how do you see you have this new rather new, you know, enterprise?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you like the next 1 to 3 years is usually where like I grab that number cuz VCs are always talking about scaling over the next
yep.
1 to 3 years, but we could do 5 if that's what you want. But where do you see the next 1 to 3, like, do you have goals? What is your like mantra for the next 1 to 3 years?
Yeah, so I mean, right now we are in the early stages of getting this book done and hopefully
right.
out there in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Nice. Are you going to self-publish or are you going to send it out?
We're going to send it out to people, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're working with somebody who's super amazing in this space, and she has really helped us kind of drive our thinking and really get narrow.
Cool.
And she is just helping us get it out there to different agents as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like when you buy a car and that's the only car that you see on the road is the one that you're thinking of buying.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, everybody in our life right now is writing a book, has just published a book,
sure.
is talking about a book.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of great people out there who are willing to help and just to bounce ideas off of and talk. But a lot of what we do in the next 1 to 3 years, we want to use this book as the foundation. Right, to really get out there that work is changing and how we think about work is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so scaling the business, we often go back and forth on, does that mean we have to hire a lot of people, or how much can we scale on our own with really solid partners
mm-hmm.
who can help us? Right. And I think where we are right now is in the latter. We really want to scale and take this outside of just regionally here. I mean, we have clients in Southern California, Las Vegas, Houston, Seattle, Bay Area. So we have, you know, quite a good cross-section of clients on this side of the United States. Mm-hmm. But we'd love to take this pretty much domestically after that.
Yeah.
Continue writing. We see a couple of more books that really relate to this.
Yeah.
But also, and I don't want to call it founder syndrome, but we have a couple of other really solid business ideas that we're working on as well as we sure. scale.
If you didn't, I don't think you're a founder.
Yeah,
like, I
right?
just really don't
the
believe.
The creative piece.
Yeah, I think that you always come up, you butt up against things like that needs to be developed. Why wouldn't I develop
Why
it?
Why wouldn't
you
I
know?
Do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And so really, our next big venture, which we'll launch later this year, is really going into kind of how work is changing in the gig economy. Mm-hmm. And we are so excited to launch it. It really does tie in with high performanceology and what we're trying to create with organizations.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it all away
no.
just yet. but the one thing that I see us continuing to do over the next 3 to 5 years is bettering ourselves, right? Making sure that we are thinking differently mm-hmm. about what is happening, taking the business in new directions based on what the market is telling us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's great for us to have, which we do, this plan for the next 3 to 5 years on scaling and looking at a regional model and where are those areas that we can develop programs that help a lot of organizations versus just one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But really, we have to listen. We have to listen to what the market tells us. We have to listen to what organizations are telling us and what they need.
Right.
And then figure out a way to capitalize on that so it's helping them at a point in their life cycle. Mm-hmm. They have a specific pain point. How can we help that?
Right.
And I love the creative aspect of having your own company and being mm-hmm. able to turn it into what you want it to be without having this really old school way of this is the company, this is what we do, this is what we're sticking with.
Right.
Right? What I can always say is that whatever we do, it will be with excellence. We will always deliver at a really high level mm-hmm. because I think the day we stop doing that, it's the day we stop being true to why we started this adventure in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. So given that and realizing that all about what your truth and that inner dialogue, what are the past, given you guys started, let's just take since the impetus mm-hmm. of performanceology, what are like the three things that you're really glad that you did in starting it, that you, for better or for worse, not
yeah.
assigning, you know, value to, like you mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast that you were happy that something negative had happened. And I was, that ties right into my main vein of like, I'm really happy for all of my failures because I really believe it's how I rose from those that made me who I am today. The successes are great and bottles of champagne rock.
Fantastic. But
yeah, but it's not really yep. what I became as the woman I am. And
yeah.
so what are, but it could be good or bad, but what are the three things since launching mm-hmm. with Jamie that you really feel like I'm so glad we did that?
Yeah, I would say the one thing is overcoming the fear of taking the leap.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because that fear can hold so many people back.
Yep.
And I think it held me back for a little while as well. You go from what's stable to just throwing it all out there and seeing what sticks and what works. So I think it's a positive and a negative.
Mm-hmm.
But getting over that fear has been one of the best things, I think, about this whole journey. Fear still exists. It
yeah.
just takes on different shapes and different forms as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that getting real about money and financially when you're starting a company is really important. One of the best decisions we made, and it was born a little bit out of fear, but a little bit about just doing it, was we are in a co-working space in Carlsbad.
Okay.
And so when you don't have revenue coming in, right, when we just started the company, we signed this lease.
Yeah.
And we both were freaking out a little bit about it.
Sure.
And what we did is we said, worst case scenario, right, we
yes.
can get out of it in 6 months. We're fine. This is, you know, the dollar value that we're out. Here we are, 7, 8 months later, and it was the best decision we ever made.
Nice.
Because it gives us a place to be creative, to come together, that's not in our homes, There's no kids, there's no dogs, there's no things that have to get done.
Yep.
And when you're starting out, you have to have a just kind of clear space to go to.
Yeah.
So I would say that would be one of the top three as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the support is the other one, right? I think that
what do you mean by support?
I didn't know how many people out there would be so supportive of this leap.
Yeah.
And what it's done, and it sounds so cliche to say, but it's kind of like reinvigorated my like belief in humanity to a degree.
No,
right?
Yes,
like it
absolutely.
Sounds so terrible. Yeah. But when you're in-house and you think, okay, here we go through another layoff, here we go through, you know, downside, whatever it may be.
Yes.
You're just in your head so much, and people hate their jobs, but they're stuck and they're doing it.
Yeah.
And when you decide, I am doing this, you hope that there are people there to support you. And I have to tell you, like, we have an amazing network.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about people who have given us business because they need something or they're referring us out because they know what we're doing, but it's people who are just there to support you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that has been one of the best things that has come out of it, to know that there is this support system, of which many are female.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's about empowering each other to really step up in those places. But that has been, I think, an eye-opening thing. And we've been fortunate where we haven't officially launched High Performanceology. I mean, we're out there, we're doing a lot of work. But it's through referrals and through our network, because it's just full of some amazing, amazing people.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Connection. I love it.
Connection.
So, well, I think we're going to wrap up, but I always ask, well, not always. It's been my new favorite thing. It's like my actor inside the actor's studio when he says, you're at the pearly gates, what do you want to say, or whatever his tagline is. So my question has become, what is the most favorite thing that you're looking forward to doing today and for this week?
Let's see. I would say today I've actually been looking forward to this.
That's the first time I won.
I was
always wondering if people thought that was a pressuring thing, and I thought maybe I should just omit the podcast, but that's wonderful.
No, today it's
because
really been
this.
Because
it's that for me too.
It's fun. It's the opportunity to really, you know, talk about what we're doing and just empowering each
Sharing.
Other. And I love that. The storytelling for me is huge.
Yeah.
I would say this week is, I have a personal trainer that comes to the house on Saturdays, and it's been a little while since I've seen her.
Uh-huh.
So it's getting right back into her kicking my butt, because that what that does is it re-energizes me and allows me to kind of throw out all the old and the bad and the negative that's in my head and to really start fresh going into Saturday, the weekend, and then into next week.
Yeah. That's a great one. I mean, I love that you have this love-hate relationship that you're unabashedly, like, cognizant of. This, like, she's going to kick my butt and I'm still going to love it. It's going to provide clarity. To love something that is not always easy or just, you know, as self-gratuitous is wonderful,
I think.
That's awesome. So finally, we're going to end with your advice for anyone starting out with this someone along your same lines. You've had such a, you know, kind of a transition throughout your career. It's hard to have someone come up exactly as you have. But if you were going to advise a couple of, you know, young entrepreneurs, female identified, to get started, what would be like the first few characteristics or pieces of information that you would tell them to absolutely do?
I would say to tap into your network, right? Establish a couple of really strong relationships so that you have support going into it, because that's what you're going to need. Good, bad, or indifferent, you just need people who are on your side throughout this. So that's number one. Number two, realize that it's going to be a journey, and what you think you're going to do day one will look different day 30, day 60, day 90, month, you know, 12, 13 years forward. So be flexible in what you're doing and allow that process to take shape without forcing it into something that may not be for you.
That's good. That's interesting. I like that. Yeah, being flexible. Pivot.
Pivot. It's true. We've all had to do it personally. The same applies professionally, especially if you're starting your own thing.
Yeah.
Right? You have to be flexible.
Yeah, always. Well, thank you, Hema, for meeting with me. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful, very enlightening. One more time, this is Hema Crockett, and she's the co-founder of High Performanceology.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And for everyone listening, thank you for being there. And remember to always bet on yourself. Until next time, Slunch Up.